From out of the darkness, they returned. After taking a couple weeks off, it's the Villain Edit. I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Ryus Hall.
Hi, Ryus.
Hello, Monty. Where have you been these last couple of weeks?
Well, there was some work scheduling, and then the NBA Finals meant, and July 4th meant some shows weren't on.
That's true. We didn't really have much to talk about.
It's true. So we're going to pretend, all that stuff we missed never happened.
No.
So, here we go. Now, Face Off, getting straight into it, I still don't think this is a very good crop of competitors.
I still think something is off about the challenges. Either they're not giving them enough time, they're giving them too many things to make. I'm not sure what it is, but something is messed up.
I don't want to blame the format, but it's a weird format. And it's suspicious that the first year they said a team of six versus a team of six is the first week where, or the first season where week after week, I didn't like anything anyone did.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Like, this week, they were all given horns.
Right.
This is a very complicated challenge. So there were these horns that Neville Page designed himself and printed in a 3D printer.
They were really cool looking.
Yeah, some of them I wanted to get up much closer and
just
look at
the patterns.
Yeah,
I'm sorry I didn't get a better look at the horns before they were put on the creatures, because afterwards...
Yeah. And everybody was supposed to make the demon that was in charge of one of the levels of hell, according to Dante's Inferno.
Right. So you got your lust level of hell, you got your greed level of hell, your gluttony.
Now, all of these levels have their own climates as well as an associated sin. I can't remember which is which, but there's the ice one, where Dante goes and says, and as you can see, these are the, I don't know, usurers or something, and they're frozen in place.
It also, yeah. Another problem I'm having is that I haven't actually read Dante's Inferno, and my familiarity with it comes entirely from a silent movie I saw that was made in 1918.
That's pretty good. My familiarity with it comes from a two-part article in, I want to say, Dragon Magazine 86 and 87. And I'm not going to look that up, and I'm just going to roll with it.
All right.
That's my pick, 86 and 87. There was a two-part article on playing D&D games based in these levels. So there was, like, rules for each of the demons. Now, none of this really, in my opinion, came into play. Everybody just grabbed a pair of horns and made a demon that looked kind of like it would go with it.
Well, that's not true. Like, the gluttony lady put a big mouth in on hers, and
I guess that, and the wrath one showed a very angry devil, which I'm not sure. Like, philosophically, if your job, your existence is about punishing people who showed wrath, are you necessarily yourself wrathful?
Yeah, I had that question as well. I mean, they're like, oh, it's the person that's in charge of punishing all the lustful people. Well, wouldn't that be a church lady?
Yeah, I thought something like that could be interesting. As it happens, I think it was violence that ended up looking like a sad, deflated, nice cow.
Was that violence?
I don't remember.
Yeah, one of them looked like a sad cow.
That was a bad one.
It was really bad, and it had a really muddy paint job.
Yeah.
I don't know why he decided to do a cow. He made up something about how on one of his levels they punish mythological creatures, and that's why he was made it look a little bit like a minotaur.
But are we punishing them for being mythological? Like,
I don't think the minotaur ever did anything. Well, I mean, he killed some people.
He ate people pretty frequently.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that was evil. He's just a
If we don't feed him those girls, or boys too, I guess, he's going to come out and destroy, I want to say, Thebes?
Was he? I thought he was just okay, I am not sure about my mythology, but I don't think that there are minotaurs in Dante's Inferno.
There are not. Well, there might be demons with the head of a bull or something.
Sure.
Anyway, the one thing I liked was the team with five people, that's Ethereal Effects, had to make five looks. And the team with four people, that's Twisted Six, real good name, guys. You're not looking dumber every month. They had to make four. So each person is making one look.
Right, which is kind of what the other show was like. You have one person per look, and then you have a supervisor that makes sure your looks
are cohesive.
One
team's approach to cohesion was putting everybody in robes, and that worked fine.
Yeah.
Frankly, everybody had horns coming off the top of their head. They looked pretty much cohesive. It's fine.
But some of them were horrible.
So, like Twisted Six, their foreperson was Joseph, and he had to rush his makeup so he could help his team. And I have his look described here as off-center ice rock.
Oh, yeah, that was really bad. You know how sometimes on this show they try to make, they make Bart tree faces?
Yes.
This was like a really poorly executed tree face spray-painted gray. It was kind of a monotone gray. It didn't have highlights in it, and it was just...
It didn't have detail, and it wasn't... It was off-center. Then there was Phil. He's the guy in suspenders. He made the bad cow, which he himself called a demented giraffe. And this is one of the cases where Michael Westmore came in, looked at it, and said, well, it looks too... That's just a cow.
Yeah.
And gave some advice, and he just didn't follow it, and then it was just a cow.
I know. He was so stuck on his idea of this particular kind of snout, a cow snout,
yeah,
that he's like, well, I guess I could try to make it look angrier. Dude, just take the snout off.
The third one on Twisted Six was Casey, I think, and I just wrote down no face, weird horns, so I don't know what that was at all. And then we get to the lady with the quavery voice who's been kind of in the bottom for a few weeks. And she had one concept which was kind of neat, which was that the face had peeled away from the skull.
Right, and the skull was kind of exploding outward and the horns were sort of exploding because the horns she had looked like bone. But the first thing that happened was she didn't attach the horns properly, so they were all flopping around.
Yeah, there was a thing earlier where people said... One of the competitors said, I know everything about horns. I'm going to make skull caps so everybody can have good-looking horns.
Right, and she helped everybody on both teams and told them how to attach the horns. But the lady with the sad voice did not do it.
That's Jill, it says here. So
it was Jill.
Jill didn't do that, so she had to figure out a new way to attach the horns. And I guess her demon was in charge of an ice level because there was a whole bunch of ice crystals, which are... I'm really sick of, because they always just look like plastic to me, exploding off the top of the head. And she also had some icicles dripping down off the eyebrows.
Her theory was that because it's an icy realm, she read, her eyes are frozen shut with, are filled with, what was it, frozen tears?
Yeah.
So in order to represent that, she took hot glue and just dribbled it down from the eyebrows.
It just looked like hot glue.
It really looked like hot glue that had been dribbled down from the eyebrows and had just dried. And
the judge's two main objections to her look were, one, the stuff she stuck on the top of the head distracted from the horns, and two, they eventually got around to mentioning, that's not where tears come from.
Nobody cries out of their eyebrows.
Ugh.
So, yeah, it was I wouldn't call it a hot mess.
Yeah. It was a hot glue mess.
It was a lukewarm mess at best.
Now, Ethereal Effects had one that was kind of a generic skinless demon.
You know, you get those.
At this point in the competition, given who you're facing, it's probably fine, but I wanted something more interesting. Kirsten, who had gluttony, decided that the chin of her model was the top of... So, all right, picture the bottom of the model's chin... That's where the top row of teeth are.
Right, right. So basically, her face came straight down to her chin, and then teeth came out of where the chin was, and then there was an applied makeup that went all the way down to the belly button.
Yeah, so it was a giant...
With teeth all around it.
A giant mouth, which didn't look that much like a mouth, because we can see that it's just painted red.
Yeah, but the head sculpt... With the teeth coming off the chin, looked great.
Yeah, the eyes...
From the neck up, I really liked it.
The eyes had a really interesting expression. They were really big and hollowed out. I had my usual complaint, which is people add a whole lot of teeth sticking out randomly that aren't going to help with anything.
Yeah, you couldn't close that mouth.
But it was interesting looking, and that's important.
Yes, because many of them were not.
The next one's kind of a witch thing with what I thought was a really neat... Oh, you want to talk more about Kirsten?
No, I just liked the witch thing.
The witch thing had this really big nose, and then the chin was like 8 inches back from the tip.
Yeah, it was really... It was a great silhouette. She used the idea of the wood patterning that you see used too much, but she made it a different shape, which I really appreciated. And it was had this huge orange wig with a bunch of stuff braided in it. I really liked it. It was, I don't know what it had to do with any level of hell or who it was supposed to be, but it was a really solid design.
Yeah. Then Faina, who was the foreperson, I really like her. She was the paint captain before. She made just a pretty generic Johnny Devil, big red guy.
Yeah.
The cowl did not look applied properly because in some of the shots there was a huge wrinkle.
Yeah, you could see that the cowl was falling forward a little.
But the judges didn't say anything. A lot of times, stuff like that, the judges will just let slide. Like, if you make something cool that's covered in feathers, by the time the judges get up close, 3/4 of the feathers could have fallen off. And
they know what you were going for. And it's like, with that, I feel like they knew that she didn't have time and that she was team captaining, and it was a good makeup design. It's just some of the glue came loose.
And her team won anyway. Then the other one on ethereal effects, I just wrote down Fat Face.
Fat Face?
I just wrote down Fat Face. Andrew made a guy with a fat face.
He looked a little like Robert Zadar in demon makeup.
Why would you bother putting demon makeup on Robert Zadar? That's a waste of makeup. He showed up. Let's go. Just roll camera. So, ethereal effects won again. Kirsten's with the big weird mouth won. And Jill lost for the ice
for the
thing.
For crying tears from her eyebrows.
Yeah. And I feel bad for Jill, but she's... Maybe it's just because of her vocal effects, but she always seemed really nervous.
Yeah. She needs more practice, and she can come back for an all-star season, maybe.
So now we're down to 3 people on Twisted Six and 5 people on Ethereal Effects, which I think it means next week it'll be time for another person from Ethereal Effects to go over to Twisted Six, which has lost every challenge.
I was hoping they would change their name to the Twisted Trio.
Oh. I guess this season they're not doing great.
No, it's a really weak season.
And there was a point during Ink Master when I asked you, could it be that the people on Ink Master are more talented than the people on Face Off? Because the first challenge on Ink Master, everybody did pretty well.
Yeah.
People came in with really weird ideas, and everybody did a pretty good job of saying...
Right, basically they're like, I want blank, blank, and blank combined. Yeah. I want a ballerina with a bowling ball.
I want a new school moose holding a crossbow. And they got a pretty good new school moose holding a crossbow.
Yeah.
The first round on Ink Master went pretty well. There is, again, a new team back. One of them is King Ruck, who I vaguely remember as not being impressed with last time.
No, I did not like him.
All of the returning veterans are already in the opening credits, so we know who most of them are.
Yeah, that seems like an oversight.
It is, especially because we can already say, oh, they're bringing back Clean Rock One again. He's that mouthy guy who's not very good.
Oh, I hate that guy.
I don't understand the point of bringing back veterans if it's all veterans who stunk last time. Like the other guy who's teamed with King Ruck did a really bad tiger his first time out that I remember this tiger.
Oh, yeah, that tiger was hilarious.
Had a claw sticking out of its mouth.
Yeah.
Now, this week's thing was composition, which for Oliver Peck means dynamic composition, but for everyone else meant something big in the foreground and something big in the background.
Something smaller in the background.
So after the first round, I was thinking, these might be pretty good tattoo artists.
Yeah, everybody did nice work in the first round. I was like, okay, sure, I would wear... The way that I judge it is whether or not I feel like the human canvas is going to be sad when they leave the show.
Yeah.
And for the first round, I felt like everybody got a decent tattoo that they can be proud of.
Now, for the big challenge, the specific challenge was color realism battle scene.
I thought it was also composition.
Well, yeah. Well, composition is what they're being graded on, but the genre is color realism battle scene. So people came in saying things like, I want Pearl Harbor on my arm, or I want a warrior princess killing a dark warrior.
Yeah. And here's her request for the warrior princess was pretty clear. I want a warrior princess. I do not want her to look... I want it to obvious that she is kicking this guy's ass. Like, maybe he's on the ground and her foot is on her chest and she's about to plunge the sword into his throat.
Yeah,
I want a triumphant woman warrior.
Yeah, she didn't want a woman fighting a dark warrior. She wanted a woman beating a dark warrior down.
Right.
And her team was Pins and Needles, and they did bad.
They did. They did so badly that she walked out in the middle of the tattoo.
So they said, well, we got an unfinished tattoo, but it was lousy.
It was. It looked like it didn't look like a warrior princess. It looked like a Disney princess.
It looked like a lady who had just picked up a sword for the first time.
She was holding the sword all wrong, and there was a tiny bit of blood on the sword. And then off kind of in the background, there was what I thought was a mountain.
Yeah.
But when they zoomed in on it, I could see that it was a so-called dark warrior, and he was just moping. He just looked sad.
But mostly,
and it was not a picture of a woman kicking anyone's ass.
But mostly the problem was her offhand. The one that wasn't holding the sword was just a terrible hand with...
Yeah, it was a weird twisted claw.
Which, you know, if you have a weird twisted claw, that's fine. But if it's not part of the request, I think... The customer would have preferred
a
more standard hand with fingers that attach to a palm of some sort.
Yes.
Now, I did not write down all of the tattoos because...
Some of them were just fine.
Yeah. Some of them were bad. Many of them were bad. There was only one good one. That was the Pearl Harbor one.
Now, the Pearl Harbor guys killed it.
Now, this was a full color scene, a really well done battleship.
You could see...
Being bombed by a couple of planes that you could tell were zeros because they were cheated down so you could see the wings.
Yeah.
A tiny little speck in the background with palm trees so you could tell it's Hawaii.
Yeah, they did a great job. But they were also the only team that didn't have to do a person.
This week made me wonder how hard it is to draw hands because there were a lot of...
It's super hard to draw hands.
Well, but you're not a professional tattoo artist.
I know professional artists, and they say it's hard to draw hands.
I bet even Rod McEwen couldn't draw a good cow foot. That's an old Peanuts reference.
Oh, my God.
Sally Van Pelt.
I mean, I can call Pete Venters right now and say, Pete, can you draw a hand? And he'll say it's really hard.
Of course Pete can draw a hand. What are you talking about?
It's hard to draw hands. I'm sure he will agree.
All right. Well, the team that went home was Think Before You Ink. That's Made Rich and DTAT. They should have gone home. For one thing, they did a bad job. Their idea of composition was too badly kind of cartoonish.
Yeah, they immediately, even their original sketch was a cartoon.
And it's just two guys facing each other, one on the left and one on the right. And then the Colosseum kind of sketched in the background and a bunch of colorful swirls.
Yeah, like greens and oranges and not colors from... Like, I thought maybe the Colosseum was supposed to be burning behind them and they were fighting. The other thing was that one of them was a Roman and one was wearing a samurai helmet.
Yeah, it's one of those things that looks good for just a second and you look at it and you go, wait, where's that guy's bicep? That elbow connects straight to the shoulder. And this guy over here... Hey, if I look where he's holding the sword... And then I look where the point of the sword is. Happened there?
Yeah, it was some kind of a bizarre it wasn't good.
I don't know if it was the worst one, but Made Rich coming out and just saying, I stand by my work. That's a great tattoo. Well, it's not, dude. It's
a bad tattoo. It was a bad tattoo.
Most of the other teams that were in the bottom were like, yeah, that was a bad tattoo. And... Our guy fainted for 20 minutes, so we didn't have time.
Right.
And the judges don't buy that because you were not 20 minutes away from a good tattoo.
Right.
But at least they know what they did wasn't great.
Right. At least they're saying, you know what? It's not our best work. We ran out of time.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, Pins and Needles was in the bottom. They should have been. If I had gone in to get an awesome female warrior tattoo and I came out with that blonde, annoying Disney princess, I would have been so pissed. I understand why their canvas walked off. I didn't blame her for a minute.
Now, hang on. There are some Disney princes that are excellent warriors.
Yeah.
You got your Mulan, Merida from Brave. She's got a crossbow.
Right. I'm not saying... You are just trying to start a fight with me. Okay, it looked like a specific Disney princess. It looked like Sleeping Beauty.
That's pretty good. She is not known for her warlike ways.
No, she's known for sleeping.
Yeah, and for being... You realize what Sleeping Beauty's fatal flaw was? She was fascinated by a spinning wheel. It called to her. Oh, if only I could spin.
Yes.
I want to make fabric. Although I will say, this only occurred to me recently when we went to Disneyland.
Okay.
Getting rid of all of the spinning wheels in the kingdom must have really done a number on that kingdom's economy.
It must have.
Where are you getting your textiles now, dude?
I guess they're, they only use the spinning wheel to make threads, so I guess they're buying the fabric, the threads from another kingdom.
But what about all the women that used to make the thread? I feel like it's an overreaction. Anyway, Ink Master... Still pretty much the show it always was, just incredibly unpleasant people shouting at each other all the time. There was one line I liked where one of the women said, "The go-to emotion should not be to get mad at us because we won," which is absolutely what happens.
It's true. Somebody wins and everybody's like, "You shouldn't have won, you're a whore," and it's like, no, that's not it.
They did a fine tattoo. I mean, maybe you did a good tattoo also and the judges just liked theirs better. Now there's talk of alliances where the veterans are being ganged up on by the new...
Yeah.
This makes me never want to get a tattoo because I don't want to have to ever deal with one of these awful, awful people that this show thinks is the only sort of tattoo artist. And also...
I've gone into tattoo shops. I have some tattoos. I have never heard the artists fighting with each other. So
like, during a tattoo... People on this show have no problem with saying, while that tattoo is happening, going, "Oh, you shouldn't do that. That looks awful."
Yeah.
Don't say that in front of the customer.
No.
Also, these tattoo artists really work out a lot.
Takes a lot of... Did you know that a tattoo gun weighs 50 pounds?
I didn't. I was going to think maybe the vibration of that tattoo gun works like a shake weight.
Maybe. Either way, I would think that the vibration that's constantly going through your hand would make carpal tunnel a problem.
I bet it does. All right, so that's Ink Master. We're still watching it. It's hard to say why.
We're curious.
Yeah. Forge and Fire. We're still watching it because I like this show very much.
I still like this show.
They did a twist this week. Instead of four individual smiths, they had four teams, master and apprentice. So the apprentice is somebody who's been... doing this for a couple of years, and they're teamed with the guy who teaches them.
Right.
Now, I don't think all of them really have a master and apprentice relationship.
Yeah, I think one was like a father and son, but I was actually talking during that part of the show where they introduced them, so I don't know. But they seem to have a father-son relationship.
There was the kind of taciturn cowboy team.
Yeah, there was taciturn cowboy and his apprentice.
And there was goofball, obviously SCA team.
I think I've met that SCA guy. There's a lot of those SCA blacksmiths who look really familiar with me, and I don't know if it's because I used to go to a lot of SCA events, and a lot of the blacksmiths they've had on the show are from this area.
Yeah, like these guys are from Central Oregon. There's
right.
No reason you wouldn't have run across them.
Right. Or if they just all look alike, and once you've met one, they just kind of all merge together because they do have a style.
In this case, they're my favorite kind of nerd, the kind that are 100% themselves. These guys shouted huzzah a lot.
Yeah, they shouted huzzah whenever somebody won something. It was endearing.
Yeah. And also, so everybody had to make a cleaver instead of a knife, big twist, with a jelly roll technique.
Now, I have never heard of a jelly roll technique.
I don't think all of the people on the show had either.
So the way you make a jelly roll technique is you take your billet.
Yeah, long.
You take your billet. They had two billets. They have to forge weld those billets together. And then, after they get those two welded together, you have to roll them up like a cinnamon roll.
But as
in
tight,
a big spiral.
As tight as possible, because you're going to forge weld those. And if there's space between the spiral, that's not going to stick.
No, it's going to make an air bubble in there. As we learned.
Oh, man. So one of the teams came out with just the worst looking piece of metal.
It was the father-son team. And the son didn't look like maybe he was 17 or 18. He didn't seem to have that much experience. He was much younger than the other apprentices. He seemed like a nice kid. But he was not good.
Yeah. So
the word we're looking for is he had not had long enough to practice his trade.
So that meant the master had to spend most of his time fixing what the apprentice did.
Right. They have to switch off.
Now, we just had an edit point because I looked at the microphone funny. Ignore it.
Okay, are we recording again
now?
Yeah,
we're recording. I can hear all of this. This is gold. All
right. So the way it worked was you had to tag team out. The master would start the jelly roll. The apprentice would put another couple, would roll it a little more, and they'd switch out. Once you get the jelly roll all rolled up, you put it back in the forge till it's real hot, and then you pound it out flat into the shape of a cleaver.
If the show is to be trusted, they had 3 hours to do this, and the first 2.5 hours was making the jelly roll.
Yeah, because the things that they had at the end of the first round, none of them were a cleaver.
Yeah.
They were hunks of metal that were kind of cleaver-shaped.
So one team went home, I forget which. And
the father and son team. No, they didn't, because they weren't...
Yeah.
They made it longer.
The cowboy master had to go home for a personal emergency, and that meant his apprentice was all alone and had to finish by himself, which I thought was great. Like, he's not as experienced as the other teams, but this is his chance to show what he can do. And, you know, if he loses, so what? Nobody expected you to win. And I liked him a lot. He just
kept his head down. He did his his job, and the other team gave him a lot of huzzas.
He was also a cowboy type, which means keeps his mouth shut and does his work.
Yeah.
The top two was the SCA team and the lone cowboy.
The lone cowboy.
And the SCA team had the master who was yucking it up. He's clearly one of the guys that does blacksmithing demonstratively at events.
Yes, and he's noisy. He just talks the whole time, and he's always yelling at his apprentice. And he was clearly having a great time, although everyone was annoyed with him. The judges were annoyed with him. They actually cut to one of the judges saying, "I could not work with that guy. I would kill him."
Yeah. I think that was Jason Knight that said that.
Because, it may have been.
Because David, the historical weapons recreation expert, he also has an SCA background. He knows what he's getting into here.
Yeah. He goes to a lot of the Ren fairs. I've seen pictures.
Yeah. So the thing that the two finalists had to make was a zip-zap, I think it was called.
Yeah, something like that.
It looks like a small baseball bat with a third of a hubcap wedged into it to make an X.
Okay, you're right. It does.
And it's used in some part of Africa. I forget what. So the cowboy went home. His master wasn't allowed to help him, so he just got to work himself.
Yeah.
The SCA team went home. Now, here's where they got lucky. The apprentice, while he is an apprentice blacksmith, allegedly an expert woodworker.
Right, so he made their handle.
Yeah.
And the other guy worked on the blade, and it seemed like a good division of labor, except the handle broke a couple times.
So they had to make another one. Big deal.
Yeah, they fixed it.
They came back. I thought the cowboys looked better, just aesthetically.
The cowboys was prettier. It had that snake on it. It had a snake on it.
His blade was a nice, smooth curve, whereas the SCA guys kind of did a double curve. Didn't look as good to me. But they did way better. Not way better. Both teams did fine.
Both teams did really well.
But there was a slight roll on the cowboys that dulled at the edge right in one part of the curve, and they had trouble cutting a rope with it. Whereas with the SCA guys, because they had a double curve, there's a little divot in the middle.
Right, the rope just caught the divot and cut very well. They both, all the blades performed very well.
Yeah.
But the SCA guys, didn't their blade have a little, roll a little on the edge?
No, the other, the Cowboys
rolled. The apprentice guys, his edge rolled a little bit when he was chopping it, when they threw it into a wall.
So the SCA guys won, and they seemed pretty happy. They said, let me check my notes, huzzah.
Oh, yes, they did say that, didn't they?
They may also have said, have a care at some point, and...
I don't know if they said have a care. They said lay on every single time they started doing anything.
Yeah, they didn't say have a care. I know that's for trebuchets.
It's okay.
Another good, fun episode of Fortune Fire. Learned about the jelly roll technique.
Oh, we also learned that some people like to heat their oil before they quench the blade.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing until the lone cowboy set his oil on fire.
Yeah, he heated up way too much and... looked nervous because it was near a propane tank, but he had a big flat piece of metal that was just the right size to cover the tank.
It was a stop sign.
And put out the fire.
Put out the fire and quenched his blade. Yeah, so I didn't know that the oil had to be a particular temperature.
Well, if it's too cold, I think it's just like quenching in water, which you must never do.
You must never quench in water. Never.
All right, now there's the Bachelorette. We're almost done with this season.
Yay. She's winnowing them down.
There were six people on The Bachelorette. And Rachel announced that there were going to be three one-on-one dates that may or may not receive roses, and a three-on-one date.
Oh, this led to such moping.
Oh, before we get to that, I want to say she walked in a white pantsuit, and one of the guys said, she looked like an angel. And I said, she looked like a Charlie's Angel.
She did look like a Charlie's Angel.
And there's nothing wrong with that. All right, so the first one-on-one date was with Brian. And everybody was shocked. This changes the game. Why would she pick Brian?
She likes Brian best. She has liked Brian best from the start. She spends a lot of time talking to him. She enjoys every moment she spends with Brian.
Yeah, this isn't that complicated.
It's not that hard to guess that Brian is probably going to be her pick, unless he screws something up.
I think Brian or Peter.
Oh yeah, Peter. He's very similar to Brian. They have the same facial hair configuration.
They went all around Geneva. They went to a watch store, and I got very angry.
Why did you get angry at the watch store?
Because it's such product placement. Like, they long lingering shots of the name of the store and the merchandise. And then there's this big deal about how she says, I'm going to buy this watch for you. Well, you're not buying that watch for him. You're contractually obligated to take a watch from the store.
Yes.
The watches are huge and garish and ugly. And I spent the rest of the episode watching carefully to see whether or not they still had their watches. She does have her watch for the rest of this date, never after that, which I can understand with her. I mean, she's wearing a dress. You might not want a big clunky.
Yeah, you don't want a big clunky wristwatch with your outfit.
I'm going to be watching you, Brian. You better be wearing that watch in every shot.
For the rest of your life.
It's like a $5,000 watch or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It had way too many dials. It didn't look like it would be easy to read, but what are you going
to
do?
Now, this is the week before Hometowns, where you get to go and meet the family of the bachelors, because all of these people still live in their hometowns and spend a lot of time with their parents.
It's weird. That is really, that is really weird to me.
Like, I know some people do, but... just the unanimity of opinion where the most important person to me is my mother. I don't know that that's true of all my friends.
I don't know. I don't know.
I like my mother.
I like your mother, too. Your mother's awesome. But I don't... in the course of our relationship, I did not meet her for several years.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably because I live in Seattle and she lives in San Diego.
Exactly.
Which you would think would occasionally happen with these guys, but doesn't. So he says family's important to him, and he had a story about he was broken up with or something.
Yeah.
And he got a rose. They were in this room that had so many candelabras. It looked like Meatloaf was about to shoot a video in there.
It was pretty funny. There were lots of tears. Like, maybe they had just covered some bleachers with fancy cloth and then sat a bunch of candelabras on them.
Yeah. So the next one-on-one was Dean. He already had a one-on-one with her. He was in that blimp date.
Oh, Dean from the blimp. He's afraid of heights, but he likes her dog.
Yep. And this caused great consternation among Eric, Adam, and Matt. And those last two, I had to look their names up, because even though we're down to the top six, I don't know who they are. Adam's only memorable characteristic is that he brought Adam Jr. into our lives.
Adam is a guy who looks like a big slab of beef with eyes.
Yeah.
I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but he looks like he should be a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
Or something.
And Matt is the other guy with a beard.
Yeah, Matt is the other guy with the beard, but his beard's a little scragglier. I call him Junior Beardo.
So, those three, Adam, Matt, and Eric, spend a lot of time saying, why isn't she on a one-on-one date with me? Maybe she went on a date with Dean because she has some questions about him. No, it's because she likes him.
Yeah.
Their whole thing was that he wouldn't open up to her on their date. She would say, talk to me about your feelings. And he'd say, you're so pretty.
That is verbatim what happened. So open up to me. Tell me a little bit about your life, about your feelings. You're so pretty.
I think this was also the one where they danced in front of a calliope.
Did she dance in front of a calliope with him?
Yeah. They were just kind of jigging in a courtyard because they found a dude with a calliope. Whereas I would have been overlooking at that calliope.
Yeah, it was pretty fancy.
Had a cat on it.
Yeah, the cat didn't seem to mind the noise at all. He's probably deaf from all those years of being chained to the calliope.
So eventually Dean revealed that he is a little nervous about hometowns because his family isn't the traditional situation.
Yes, he doesn't get along. Him and his father do not get along.
Apparently after Dean's mother died, his father, who had been the fun parent, did not switch over to become the nurturing parent. Instead became the weird parent that Dean doesn't like.
Right. And as we saw in the scenes of next week, it is going to... Oh, and Dean said he became a little more eccentric. But then when we see the preview for next week, we see what he means. A little more eccentric?
Well, he's turned into a yogi.
It is true he wears nothing but purple and has a lot of peace signs in his house.
He has a great big beard and a turban, and he looks... I don't know. I don't want to get into it because I don't know the guy, but I can...
It made me super happy to see a family that wasn't fake.
Yeah. Like, I felt like maybe Dean's problem was, I don't want to expose my father to this television show, because God knows what's going to happen there.
Yeah, it's... The only thing I'm excited about in the next episode is seeing his crazy family, because I got a crazy family of my own.
Yeah. I mean, I love you, honey. So he opened up a bit, and then he got a rose, obviously. Final one-on-one date, Peter. Other three guys, outraged. How could Peter get a date? Well, because she really likes Peter, dummy. And they got on a dog sled.
Oh, they did, and the dogs were all so happy.
I love seeing dog sleds, because in my head, I always for a moment think, oh, those poor dogs forced to drag people around. But dog sled dogs are always so excited.
I know. When they get to go, they're like, we have been waiting for this. We had to run around like idiots. Yeah.
They don't like not dragging people. Yeah. All they want to do in life is run faster with you on the sled. They're so happy about it. And they had a discussion, which we were zoomed in real close on, I think because they were freezing.
Yeah.
And Peter's big thing was he's worried that he might not be enough in love with her. I guess.
He's guarded about his feelings. Yeah, and he's the one that talked about how he left his last girlfriend because he felt like she deserved someone who loved her more, and that he's not sure of his relationship with this woman he's only been on two dates with.
Yeah, that's reasonable. That's also where the real nonsense editing came from in this episode.
There was some amazing nonsense editing.
So when he was describing that situation where he broke up with his girlfriend, he says the phrase, And I was sad because I knew those tears were because of me.
She was just standing in the street crying and crying, and I knew those tears were because of me.
So we edit that together with Rachel crying because of something totally different.
Uh-huh.
And now we make stupid people think that maybe Peter's going to make Rachel cry.
Yeah.
I don't...
He did not.
And it's such a short con, too, because, like, that's going to happen in 20 minutes. Why are you lying to me poorly for a 20-minute thing?
So what he basically did was make Rachel unsure that he wanted to marry, that he's the Marian kind, which is not a good move on this show, but...
But he still got a rose because he's one of her favorites.
But she does really like him, even if he ain't the Marian kind.
So then came the 3-on-1 date. And again, that's Eric, who is, I think, a real smart guy, but kind of too prone to introspection, it looks like to me.
Eric gets into his own head a lot.
Yeah. Most of the back at the house scenes are Eric these days saying, what do you think they're doing on that date? What do you think I did wrong that I'm not on that date instead?
Uh-huh.
Do you think this? Do you think that? What do you think, man? Let's talk this out.
Uh-huh.
And I like
Eric.
The
guys are like, Eric.
What?
Yeah.
I like Eric. But I feel like he might be too thinky.
Yeah.
But he seems to turn it on when he's with Rachel, which is what you have to do. And then the other two, Adam says, and this is a direct quote, I went back and transcribed it, my relationship is probably stronger than anyone else's in the house. No, it's not. What are you talking about?
Yeah. That's Adam is Adam the one that's like the meat guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the opposite of Eric in this situation. He's like, everything's going fine. Why does she keep going on dates with Brian and spending 3.5 hours in a hot tub with Peter? I don't know. I'm doing fine.
Yeah. He's kind of a doofus.
And Matt, I have no idea.
Matt's just Junior Beardo, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's quiet, he's a listener.
Matt's never had a one-on-one, or at least from what we can see on the show, has stood out in any way, in any form.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised he's still here.
Well, good news, he's not.
What?
The rose of, given the choice of one between, I still have to look up their names, Eric, Adam, and Matt, goes to Eric, the guy with lots of screen time.
Huh.
So, good for you, Eric. And that brings us to our top four, which, for the first time, I can name all the people on the show without looking at my computer. Eric, Brian, Dean, and Peter.
Right.
I don't guarantee I could recognize their faces if I was shown them. If someone just said, who's this guy? I would not go, that's Peter from The Bachelor. That would not happen.
No.
But that's the top four, and we're going to hometowns, and hopefully ending the season pretty soon.
We've got to end it pretty soon. There's only four of these guys left.
I mean, I don't know what... I mean, this is not my problem, because I'm going to stop watching this show once this season is done.
Yes, but you are.
I don't know which of these guys they're going to decide has the charisma to be the object of desire next season.
Oh my God, they're going to have to bring one of these idiots back?
I feel it's got to be either Brian or Peter, whichever one doesn't get chosen.
You don't think they're going to go with Eric?
Eric
is too introspective.
I honestly don't think
him.
They're going to go with Eric, and I will tell you why. I don't think they want a black bachelor right after a black bachelorette.
Okay.
It took them this long to have one African-American.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do another one right away.
Okay. Also...
But I do feel like Eric is the one I could most likely have an actual conversation with.
He seems nice.
He has said things that weren't just about Rachel.
Yeah, it's really creepy the way that they only talk about Rachel. And I know that that's just the editing, that I'm sure that in real life they talk about things other than Rachel. But it's just really creepy.
Yeah. I guess we are going to have like a men tell all episode where, and I'm going to fast forward through that one so much.
Oh yeah.
Like, hey everybody, remember Waboom? Zzz. Hey everybody, remember Lee? Zzz.
Oh, we're done. Tickle Monster? Zzz.
Right, go back.
Hi, I'm Tickle Monster. I've started my own website. I tickle people for a living now. Come to www.ticklemonster.biz.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Well, we did watch that documentary.
Oh, yeah,
the Tickle documentary.
That was a great documentary.
It was. It's all kinds of messed up.
That about covers it for regular television shows. We have watched a couple of episodes of Battle of the Network Stars, which is not really worth talking about.
Not at length, really.
I like that it's very similar to the old Battle of the Network Stars, and that it's celebrities just on the Pepperdine campus. There isn't an audience. There isn't good production value.
No, they clearly just show up there in the morning and film all day.
Yeah. In this case, nobody has even practiced. They're told, like, you're running the 400. I'm what? Okay. I think I know how to run. Legs go towards the ground, right? Here I go. I certainly do not recognize all of the celebrities, but that's my problem, not the show's.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize some of the old ones, but, like, these new celebrities.
I like it when the old celebrities have other projects, like Kim Fields comes out and says, I'm Kim Fields from Facts of Life, she was Tootie, but also Living Single.
Yeah.
Sure. Also, Dancing with the Stars. Come on, Kim. That doesn't count. Joey Lawrence just said he was from Melissa and Joey, refusing to mention Blossom. I thought that was hilarious. Like, it's a fun, low-pressure show.
It is. It's low-pressure. It's okay. Some of these people know how to kayak, though.
Yeah. That's what's fun, is you find out, it turns out that I kind of like Jack Osborne, and I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, and he did really well. I was proud of him.
Or there was somebody else, I can't remember who, I liked in the second episode. I was rooting for her, and I never liked her before.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that. It's so low pressure, most of these people are not in celebrity mode.
No.
Which, I think it's fun. It's a really good no-content summer show.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd call it really good. But no, I would call it a no-content summer show.
Yeah. That's going to do it for us this week. We are going to be back next week, and we are going to be talking about television shows.
Yes, we are. We're going to watch some on our television.
And catchphrase.
Ah, what?